Welcome to the Unfolding Podcast, a space where we explore what it looks like to really trust yourself, say no without guilt, and live your life like it actually belongs to you. I am Erica Vohl, a decision mentor and inner trust guide, and I help women in midlife untangle from the life patterns of shape-shifting and keeping everyone else happy, claim how they're uniquely designed to make decisions, and understand their unique strengths. Using human design as a lens, we clear the noise of conditioning, so their no feels powerful and their yes feels true, and they can move forward without self-doubt, guilt, and the pressure to prove anything. On this show, we have honest conversations about self-trust, boundaries, energy, and identity, especially for women in midlife who are done living by the shoulds and second-guessing themselves. If you've taken every personality test, followed the recommended path, and still can't shake that feeling that you've been spending your whole life trying to fit in, what you really wanted was to belong, you're in the right place. You'll hear stories, insights, and tools rooted in human design and real life. Not to tell you what to do like another self-help book, but to help you really hear yourself so you can stop overthinking and start making decisions that feel grounded, clear, and true. In my last episode, I talked about what inspired this summer of self-love. It was one comment from a woman named Michelle on a client panel, and it really sparked this whole thing. But I want to take a step back even further because there's a reason that her comment hit me so hard. There's a reason I started ugly crying when I heard her talk about how human design helped her love herself. This has been part of my life's work, learning to love myself, learning to understand that I have worth just for being alive, and it's always been a struggle. I could never quite understand why other people felt so self-assured and wondered, what was I missing? What did they have that I was missing? In the last 10 years, some things have started to surface that have given me some real insight into why this has been such a hard thing for me. I grew up in a family of critics. It was all meant out of love, but my brain and my body took it as that there was something wrong with me. I felt I needed to get the good grades to be worthy and to be loved. I needed to look a certain way, to be a certain weight that was different from what was naturally happening in my body. I needed to dress differently than what felt most like me. The women in my family were and still are professional criticizers of other women. It's part of our family stories. My great-grandmother, who died at 90, when she was in her 80s, she was at a restaurant with another family member, and she commented that the waitress needed a girdle, and everybody laughed about it afterward. And it was told like this endearing thing about her, how she couldn't hold her tongue, how she was brutally honest. But what we never, ever talked about was how that criticism became part of our family conversations. And I learned from the best. I learned to take that criticism of other people and I turned it inward onto myself. Because if they thought that there was something wrong with those other people, then I thought that they must think those same things about me. My grandmother telling me to stop frowning when I was just focused on something. Being told to stand up straight so my stomach didn't pooch and I didn't look fat. Being told that I should be part of a certain group of people. And when I didn't pledge a sorority, my grandmother wondered how would I even make friends in college? She even had the audacity to tell me that if I got a pink sweater, maybe people would like me better. I loved my grandmother. But her criticism really, really shaped a lot of how I felt about myself. She was also constantly on my aunt's case to lose weight. And so I saw my aunt who was heavier, and I saw myself, and I thought, there's something wrong with me. All of that criticism became self-criticism. And when I did get in with a group of popular kids, it was only for a little bit, and then they turned on me on a slumber party, or they would betray me in some way, and each time it became a further validation that there was something wrong with me. That I was not worthy, that I was not acceptable. I did so much to try to feel worthy, to prove my worth. I would work so hard to be somebody that I wasn't, only to feel fake and still not accepted. So it was like this double rejection from others and from myself. And as I got older, I decided I would do some body image and self-image workbooks, and hoping that they would help me learn how to love myself. I'll never forget being on vacation and my mom saying, "Well, you don't have a negative body image, do you? You're so cute." I was 22. I didn't want to be cute. So in addition to those self-image, body image workbooks, I started to also read self-help books. I spent so many years trying to find my people, trying to feel like I belonged somewhere. I would have friendships that would fizzle, or I would move to a new city, or something would change. And I always kept coming back to the same idea that there was something wrong with me. Either there was something wrong with my personality, or that there was something with the way I looked, or that I wasn't warm enough. When I was knitting, I would knit things for people. I would knit socks and blankets and sweaters for their babies, hoping that that would help them like me more. I was an overgiver because I felt like I needed to earn their love and acceptance, and it was exhausting. And then I met my husband. And for the first time in my life, I didn't feel like I needed to prove anything. I didn't have to do anything to win his love. I had never felt that before, and it was so comforting, but it was also unsettling at the same time. I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop. I was waiting for something to happen, and it didn't. 4 months after we met, he said we should get married, and I had been through a horrible breakup 3 years before. I was not ready to commit to anything long-term, so I told him I didn't feel like I knew him well enough. And then 3 months later, he asked me again, and I said yes. But even after moving in together, the wedding, moving to another city a year later for graduate school, the crazy thing is I still felt loved. It was a really strange sensation for me. The hard thing was I didn't love myself. I was my own worst critic. If my pants were too tight, it was another reason that I and my body were unacceptable. When I didn't get into library school on the first two tries, I found so many things wrong with myself. I didn't take it as that there were others who were a better fit for the program. I took it as a personal rejection, that there were things about me as a person that were so unacceptable that they did not want me. What I did not know at the time that I know now is that for me, the right timing is everything. The right things in my life happen at the right time. It's actually a significant part of my human design. But I didn't know that yet. After that second rejection, I worked so hard to prove I was worthy enough to get in. I applied again, and still I had that chip on my shoulder that I needed to prove my worth. I also, in this, all of this, became a master at deflecting compliments. Someone would say, "Erica, I love your dress." And I would say, "Oh, thanks. I got it on sale. It was at Target." Instead of just saying, "Thank you." Every day I found myself comparing myself to others. Someone was always thinner. Someone was always more attractive. They were less scattered. They had a better job. They made more money. It got so bad that I didn't even believe my husband when he told me I looked good. I would think he was saying it because he felt he needed to, not because it was true. The only thing I felt that I had that was good enough was my husband. He was and still is amazing. And almost every time I saw my mom after we moved back to the same city, she would say, "It looks like you've lost weight." As if that was a compliment. And much of the time I had not. And when I hadn't, it started to make me sad. Was I not okay if I gained weight? Was I no longer worthy of love? I remember my mom buying me a dress as a teenager that was a size too small because it was an incentive for me to work out that summer. The store didn't have my size, so we bought the smaller dress. I did not lose the weight, but I still somehow managed to fit into the dress at a later time. And when it did, when I tried it on, it did not look right on me. It was the wrong dress for my body. So that was the first 40 years of my life. And something started to shift around the time my daughter was born. She was born shortly before my 40th birthday, but I remember being with the women in my family, and I noticed how much criticism was just a natural part of our conversations. I had learned to be self-critical from the best. But that day, as I was holding my daughter and they were talking, something came up in me. I never, ever wanted my daughter to feel the way I felt when I was growing up. And I decided from that day on, I made it a point that I would never comment on her body's shape or her size. I would compliment her on what she's done, hitting that ball out into the outfield, running fast, conquering the monkey bars when she was 5. And not once have I heard her criticize her body, except for she's noticed some freckles popping up on her cheeks this summer, and she's frustrated with her hair being a little frizzy on humid days. But it's not this personal attack that I know so well. It's like a situation. I'll never forget when I had finally had enough from my mom, hearing that it looks like I have lost weight. We were at the Grand Canyon. My daughter was sitting at that table with us. We were all on vacation. And I said to my mom, point blank, please don't comment on my weight, whether it's good or bad. You can say I look strong, but I don't want you to comment on my weight again. That was 8 years ago, and there's only once that she has slipped and she caught herself. And I love my mother dearly, but this is one of the things we have worked on for years. And a few years ago, my daughter asked me on the ride home from my parents' house. She asked me what skinny meant. She said, Grandma and Aunt said that I'm so lucky I'm skinny. What does that mean, Mom? I explained to her what skinny was, but she was so confused. Why did her size make her lucky? No matter how much we talked it through, she still couldn't understand why her size made her lucky. And I had to ask my mom and my sister to please not tell my daughter she's skinny or to not comment on her body again. It has become my mission as a mom for my daughter to not have external critics that are so strongly shaping her inner voice. And I know that those inner voices are going to come up for her as she enters her teen years, but I don't want those voices to come from people who love her. Because body criticism done in the name of love is never, ever internalized that way. For me, it has always landed as a flaw that I needed to fix. And that spiral, when I get in it, can get very, very dark. So why the summer of self-love? Why am I taking it beyond Michelle's comment on a client panel? Human design has been a huge part of helping me heal things around self-love. I felt like there was something wrong with me and my body for most of my life. And human design has helped me understand that I am perfectly designed. And then about 6 months ago, I had this huge aha moment. I was studying my human design for a recent certification, and I was learning about two areas of the chart called the nodes. When you look at the chart, they look like little horseshoes on the sides, and they mark the points in the sky where the sun and the moon's orbits intersect. They're actually where the eclipses happen. The bottom one is the south node, and that represents the themes and the environment that shape the first half of your life. The top one, the north node, reveals what you're moving into in the second half. And when I read mine, I had chills. My south node is in gate 15, which is the gate of extremes. And I learned through extremes. It's all about embracing variety and a full spectrum of what life has to offer. But on the shadow side or the challenge side, it carries a restlessness and a self-doubt when you feel pressured to maintain the same routines as everyone else, feeling incompetent for not keeping the same schedule. And for me, it also created this intense way of seeing things in extremes. I was either not good enough or I was too much. It carries a lot of shame about being different. And I felt like a lot of times I was too weird or like I didn't belong, and it didn't feel safe in my family to be my true self. My uniqueness was only okay if it fit into a box that I was expected to be in. And then the real aha moment for me was when I heard about my North Node. The North Node reveals what we're moving into in the second half of our lives, what we're meant to see, what we're meant to be surrounded by. And mine is in the gate of self-love, which for those of you who know human design is gate 10. And when I read that, I had chills. The first part of my life was in the gate of extremes, and the second part is in the gate of self-love. And the more I read about it, the more it made sense about what I'm here to do and who I am here to be. Not just embodying and in loving myself, but helping others see how they can love themselves too. And I started to see it play out in real life, in making sure my daughter doesn't feel criticized the way I did, in taking steps to reframe things for myself, in starting to use human design as a way to love myself rather than a reason to fix myself. And then I heard Michelle on that client panel in May say, human design helped her love herself. And it was a huge aha moment for me. Like I said earlier, I had some really ugly, full-on crying tears because I had experienced that too. And then the next morning I was meditating and I heard it, the summer of self-love, and it could not be more appropriate. I don't have this all figured out. But I knew if I needed this reminder for myself, that there are others who need it for themselves too. That loud inner critic, the one who was so quick to comment when something doesn't go great, she's actually started to mellow out as I've learned my human design. And a lot of times now it's turned into a recognition of where this is a challenge that's showing up for me. When I want things to move faster, it's a reminder that things are actually moving at the right pace. My life's work is about divine timing. And when I push to make things happen, they don't work out. I need to be patient. Human design has helped me reframe so many things. Giving myself grace, knowing that when I try to figure things out in my head, it just turns into overthinking and ruminating. It's given me so much of an, oh, that's why. And instead of getting so deep in my head that I'm failing or that I'm a bad person, it makes me pause. Because I've seen it in various places that no matter how much you try to beat yourself up, this is not a motivator for challenge. That loud inner roommate still shows up. She's a lot less angry right now, and she isn't blaming or mean like she used to be. I think some of it is also reflecting back on how much time and energy I spent beating myself up. And all it got me was miserable. Burnout 4 years ago was a huge wake-up call for me. I know my time is finite. Being critical doesn't get me anywhere. And I started asking myself, what would it look like to shift the thoughts to a more loving stance? Others have said to talk to yourself the way that you talk to your best friend. And for me, the question became, would I say this to my daughter? That's been a huge shift for me. Now, do I still have negative thoughts about my body? Yes, of course I do. I'm a woman. I grew up with a healthy amount of conditioning, as do many women my age. I mean, I just saw a headline the other day that said, super skinny is back with the rise of Ozempic and weight loss drugs. And social media makes it so easy to go down the path of beating yourself up. So this is the story behind the summer of self-love. It's not because it's a feel-good thing. It's because I know I am not alone in this struggle to love myself. It's a constant reminder. It's constant work to not repeat the patterns of the past in my family so that my daughter grows up feeling good about herself, knowing that she is strong and capable and smart and beautiful, and that no one needs to comment on her body or make her feel like she is anything that less than. I am so excited to share the stories of midlife women this summer with you. We're going to hear about their journey through individual profiles, in Substack Lives, and in articles throughout this whole season. I can't wait for you to meet them. I am getting them, and I am just so amazed at their beauty, and I'm so touched by their stories. If this episode resonated with you, I would be so grateful if you click the plus sign to subscribe and share it with a friend. You can also find me on Substack, where I publish articles, host workshops, and share about human design and midlife. Thanks for joining me. Be be well.